Should we start? Okay, hopefully enough people are online. The connection is still working. There will be an announcement that we're going to be extended every 15 minutes, but that'll be for the next 300 minutes. So our next speaker is Michael Dean from BBN Technologies. He's going to speak on, actually he's an update. He's spoken in the past on this topic to us and others on the Open Geospatial Ontology Repository.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. So the general topic here is Open Geospatial Ontology Repositories. You go to slide 2. And specifically what I'm going to talk about is the Open Ontology Repository Initiative. This was a collaborative community effort that started almost 2 years ago. It was actually the summit, the subject of Ontology Summit 2008, which in particular identified a lot of the desirable characteristics that I'll talk about on the next slide. And it continues to be incubated basically as a project by the Ontolog Forum, which has been providing a lot of the resources we're using for both OR meetings and also the actual deployment platform. So the goal of OR is basically to produce some open source software infrastructure that can be used to support sharing of open source and other ontologies. And you know, we'll get into a little bit more detail about what specifically that means. The current implementation is based on ViterPortal, which has been developed by the same group at Stanford that developed Protégé. This is actually a domain-independent platform. The name primarily reflects the funding sources from NIH that we use to develop. So we currently have a couple of OR sandbox implementations that are running that people can go and try out and play with and do some development with. And we're in the process of preparing for production deployment. And all the details on the OR initiative basically are available at the link down below. Next slide, please. So, beyond the sort of basic editing and storage characteristics and things like that that we expect for repositories, there's a number of other desirable characteristics that we identified at the Ontology Summit. So one of those is multiple language support. OWL is kind of our initial target. Some of Michael Gruniker's students at the University of Toronto are in the process of adding support to Common Logic to that as well. In addition to maintaining ontologies, it's important to maintain mappings between them for a lot of the integration aspects that Luis talked about and other efforts. And so we'd really like to essentially make these mappings, you know, first-class citizens as well. And be able to treat them analogous to the way that we treat the ontologies themselves. A lot of the existing ontologies have basically, ontology repositories, have sort of fallen into disuse because there's no real criteria for what should be in there or kind of acceptance or validation criteria. So you have a mixture of an ontology that's being used by thousands of people worldwide and something that some undergraduate, you know, came up with last night. And there's a lot of desire, I think, for certain environments to basically have more tighter control, essentially, on what's in the ontology library and what's actually reported. So this could range from really a fully curated site to a site that basically keeps track of user ratings of ontologies and things like that, and probably some other variations on that as well. Metadata about the ontology is important, you know, where it came from, what it's used for, what it's intended to be used for, and so forth. And also provenance, essentially traceability, basically, through the ontologies and mappings as well. I think, unique aspect that we're really looking at is basically having multiple OOR and other repository instances and be able to actually federate information between them. So in some cases, it would basically be bidirectional exchange of metadata. In other cases, it might be unidirectional. So a company might decide to stand up an OOR instance within their firewall, but also import ontologies from a public OOR you know, that's something we're quite excited about and working towards. And finally, you know, we're interested in really having a modular software architecture that allows individual instances to select the features and policies that they want. So, you know, if they want basically only to support OWL with user ratings and using OMB metadata, basically, you know, that would be a reasonable sort of set of configuration options that they could select. One comment that might be helpful here is we've used the term registry to basically refer to software components that primarily import metadata about ontologies that are hosted somewhere else, and repository for environments where basically they're really providing full lifecycle support for ontologies. But we, you know, we can both, you know, have a role, and you know, again, this could be one of the options. And we also want to basically be able to federate OOR with other existing repositories and ontology construction tools, Moodle, and things like that. Let's go to slide 4. So within SOCOP, we've been talking about repositories for quite a while. A group of us about a year and a half or so ago submitted a proposal to NSF that emphasized the use of registries and repositories to facilitate awareness and reuse. And we've recently resubmitted that and specifically identified, you know, OOR as the as the repository we want to use and contribute to as well in terms of, you know, unique geospatial characteristics. And this is very much in line with OOR's current bootstrapping funding strategy to sort of get included in other people's proposals and move the project forward that way. Let's move to slide 5. What I'd like to do now is actually give you a little bit of a walkthrough of our actual sandbox instance. That's the URL at the top. Basically, it's preloaded with a number of ontologies, including 3 simple geospatial ontologies. And the capabilities I was planning to look are browsing, searching, and alignment or mapping. So this is actually the OOR sandbox instance. As I said, this is essentially a rebranded version of BioPortal is actually currently lagging the release of BioPortal, which we'll see in a minute, but we're in the process of upgrading that as well. So one of the ontologies that I loaded here is the spatial relations ontology that was developed at the VOCamp that I think is a topic of, will probably be mentioned anyway in the next talk. This is basically some metadata about the ontologies in terms of some contact information and documentation pages and things like that. Let's go down to the bottom. And you can see basically support for the versions that have been uploaded to the repository here. And if we click on Explore, then we can actually look at the data about the ontology itself. So this is a fairly simple ontology with about half a dozen or so classes defined. And let's click on Polygon. So the polygon, you know, for instance, the subclass of geometry and so forth. The visualization will give you a nice line drawing. We discovered that basically we need another plugin basically when we actually do that. So it'll basically give you a hierarchy, you know, either the neighborhood right around that class or going all back to the root. If you click on mapping, this is the actual ontology mapping here. So what we did here was we specified a polygon in this ontology basically is an equivalent class to the polygon in the GML ontology, which came from the WPC incubator group. And there's some other similarities, but there's some other differences between the two. So let's actually click on point on the left-hand side. And now click on mappings again. Go back. And click on new point-to-point mapping. and ooh, okay, huh.
That's me, not you, I guess.
That's, why don't we just go back at this point? Essentially, what we would get at this point is a search box for selecting when the ontologies are available, and then the ability to type in points, and we could, we would find basically in that case, ontology actually has a classical point as well, as well as a property, and we could select the class and make those equivalent. Right now, the mappings are just equivalent classes. As Louisa's example showed, in the wild, subclass relationships are, equally if not important, and that's something that we expect to support in future versions of OOR as well. Let's see. I think those are really the, why don't you go back up to the search button at the top. So here we could actually, why don't you search for point, the ORNT in the search text, and then click on search. And this will give you a fair example, basically, that this term essentially appears in a number of different ontologies, and that if they really want to create mappings between them where they where that's appropriate. Okay, why don't we go back to the slides? Let's see, I go to the next slide, which is basically just a screenshot so that people can, for archival purposes. So, why don't you go to the next slide? One of the things that FirePortal aspires to when it grows up is being at a scale that's more similar to the FirePortal itself here. You can see they have 174 ontologies, 1.5 million concepts or classes, and a very significant number of mappings between them, although I don't think they actually display that statistic. So this is a slightly newer version of software that we will be shortly updating the OOR to use. And this BioPortal, I think, is quite impressive in terms of the number of users and ontologies, and also really the quality of that appear there. So we expect ultimately there'll be a sort of a general OOR instance, and then what quite likely, a number of domain-specific ontology instances, as well as private copies that are also federated. Next slide. So a couple questions, I guess, really for the audience here. So one of the things is, if you're looking at a repository for geospatial ontologies, how much additional capability or special characteristics do you need? And this is assuming that we're really focusing on concepts and relationships.
Your meeting reservation has been extended 15 minutes.
Right. Not a large number of instances like GeoNames, for example, has with 4 million points or something like that. So the question might be, do we actually need some of the traditional differentiators for geospatial work? Like spatial and temporal indexing, or accommodating different coordinate reference systems. And my guess is that there probably are some spatially unique ontologies, like an ontology of the Amazon rainforest or something. But I think the desire is to really try to generalize those so that they wouldn't spatially. Especially constrained or unique. And another aspect here is basically, it may be desirable if the ontology repository could actually federate with things like the OGC web catalog services or other services. Finally, if folks are intrigued by this and would like to help or are interested in using the repository and providing some feedback on use cases and things like that, we'd welcome additional participants, and The next OR telecon is actually tomorrow, and it's an open community, so you're very welcome to join us. I think that's the last slide.
How would people get the telephone number for the call?
If you go to the link on the, well, it's openontologyrepository.org, but that's the link on slide two or so. That has all of the minutes of past meetings as well as upcoming ones. There we go.
I should add, this is Gary again, that the these slides are on the SoCal wiki, SoCal.org. There's a link to the workshop, and on the workshop there's at least four presentations I had last night, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. And Todd Snyder, I think, also left some copies of a paper that we presented in the post-term demo session at ISWC that provides a little more detail and some examples on the OR.
Right. And those are outside the room we're in right now. I'm not sure if that's it or not. We have maybe time for a question or two. And I want to point out that we have planned a sort of a roundtable discussion on OOR later. So if people are interested in pursuing that, and we have that and follow up there too.
This is John Bateman. Could I ask a question now? I don't think I'll be around for the little later session, unfortunately.
Yes, certainly. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think this is great. It certainly echoes some of the things which we're doing in Bremen as well, because we've also brought up a bioportal installation for one of the ontology projects we're working on, and we're bringing in space as well. I was particularly interested in a direction which you also mentioned on the slides, and one which we want to be going in as well. But we're not quite sure how to get there yet, so I'll be interested in your comments on this. We know that we will need to be outside of description logic and RDL when we start relating the more interesting spatial ontologies. And one of your sort of goals there is to extend the languages which are supported by the bioportal to go beyond description logic. How are you going to be doing that? Is that a place where we could get together and see how things happen?
Yeah, I think that would be great. I mean, I think my expectation is that there'll probably be different storage models. I know the Toronto folks have had some difficulty trying to shoehorn common logic into the current storage structure for BioPortal.
Right, right. What we're trying to do is to sneak a lot of stuff into the OWL annotation, so there's enough information to be picked up by our other tools, but that's not really the ideal solution. So it'd be interesting to pursue that.
Right. Yeah, I think native support for other languages, likely including, you know, Common Logic is certainly a popular target. Things like the emerging, you know, WCC RIF, basically, the literature format, you know, provides a way of adds to the expressiveness, basically, beyond what you get with OWL as well.
Right. You might want to also have a look at our common algebraic specification language. We have all the tools for running that as well, if that could come in, because it's up there, so similar with common logic, but with more structuring mechanisms. That would be an interesting thing to compare.
Right. Yes, definitely.
Great.
Thank you.
If you get him on the phone, just try to text on to John and Dean's discussion here. I know one of your people, Alex Garcia, has been coming to some of the OR meetings, but hopefully if you can have people that would consistently join us at the biweekly calls, that would be fantastic, John.
Yeah, I think they'll have to pick up on this, yeah, I agree.
I think I may have forgotten to mention there are quite a number of people in the I think in the room there and on the phone that have been involved in OOR. So there's a number of resources if you have more questions.
Great.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Mike. So I'm Dave Coulis. I was one of the co-chairs of the Terra Cognita workshop with Gary Bergcross and Nancy Wiegand. Nancy, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great. So if you have anything to add at this point, at any point, feel free to jump in. And can everyone see the slides on the phone?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So this year was the third workshop in the Terra Cognita series. Terra Cognita is an academic workshop. We have a call for papers, and people submit academic papers, and we have reviewed them. The first Terra Cognita workshop was put on by several individuals from Ordnance Survey in the UK, and then Nancy, Gary, and I picked it up last year. It has been co-located every time with the International Semantic Web Conference, as it was this year, and that happened about 2 weeks ago. As far as I can tell, this is the biggest participation we've had in the workshop. We had maybe more than 35 participants. They actually had to bring in chairs at the last minute, which was kind of exciting for the organizers. Maybe part of that was because we were very lucky. We had introductory remarks given by Tim Berners-Lee, who came and kicked off our workshop for us. We also had our keynote was given by Lynn Usery from USGS. And then we had 8 papers presented from those that were submitted. Some of the presentations are online, those from people who were able to give me their slides. The link is there. All of the papers are available online. They've been published, so you can go and take a look at theirs if you'd like. The focus of this workshop, as in previous years, has been on combining geospatial data and ontologies with semantic web for useful applications. So Tim came and gave some introductory remarks, which we're very grateful for. The real meat of his talk was 2 big points. One is that open geospatial data is becoming more prevalent along with linked data in general on the semantic web. One of the examples of that is OpenStreetMap, which, if you're not familiar with it, is a project to build a database of open map feature map information. So streets, points of interest, stuff very similar to what you would find on Google Maps, except the data is built by the community and open to anyone who wants to use it for any particular purpose. And the main thrust of what Tim said when he was there was get the data out there. And granted, when you're at ISWC, that's a slightly different context for get the data out there than in some of the data environments that we talk about here often, but I think the general idea still applies. You know, when you allow your data to be used by whatever audience you can actually allow it to be used by, that means that you can build more useful applications from it and really get more mileage out of it. The keynote, again, was given by Lim from USGS, and he talked for a good while about the national map. It fit in very well with our workshop because it gave us a good sense of purpose for why the technical issues that we were trying to resolve were important. He talked about the national map in its third form, which is going to be ontology-driven and full of spatio-thematic knowledge. And this notion of combining ontological knowledge with geospatial data is going to really permeate everything that this version of the national map does. Things like knowing that something is a bridge means that it has to cross over something else and all of the implications that you can get from that. And he posed a really good use case of what he saw the national map being in 2015. Incorporating real-time data from a variety of sources. So if there's a forest fire that's raging along, we should be able to easily use this data to figure out which structures are in the path of this forest fire, which trails give access to the fire. So this really involves connecting the various parts of the geospatial data in a way that they've not been connected before, as opposed to those connections being in the mind of a GIS analyst who has to load all of the layers and make the correlation directly themselves. I'm going to talk about a few of the papers that were presented that I thought were noteworthy for this group for some reason or other. The first was talked about building an urban computing application. And the basic problem statement is if a user is in a new city and wants to know about things that are nearby, points of interest, attractions that are within some distance of where they are, how do they get to them? And certainly we've all seen applications like this before. I mean, you could go to Google Maps and maybe perform some sort of query like that. I think the remarkable thing here was that this was built on a stack of open data such that the integration effort to get all of these things together was very minimal. And you can see there's a demo for that online as well. Another paper, Spatial Planning on the Semantic Web, I thought was very interesting. The problem statement, for a given parcel of land, can we decide whether or not a particular land use is allowed? So this problem, and they focus on the Netherlands here, the problem involves combining land use rules from several different levels of government. So local authorities, provincial authorities, and national authorities. And it involves the spatial relationships of the parcels of land that are part of the question. So you really need both the ontological power of OWL or something similar and the geospatial relationships in order to answer these types of questions. I thought this was interesting because it was an application that wasn't just an incremental improvement over some geospatial task that can already be done easily by technical systems. This is something where now you can ask the system, for this particular parcel, is this land use allowed? And it can reason through all of the various rules. And so that was fairly unique. A third paper, Transparent Semantic Enablement Layer for the Geospatial Web. This was another new proposal for ways to integrate working with OWL and existing OGC standards. In their architecture, they defined reasoners for OWL and RDFS as a profile of a web processing service, and ontology repositories as a profile of the OGC catalog service. So they were coming at it from the GIS.
Your meeting reservation has been extended 15 minutes.
And trying to incorporate the value into the existing architectures. And there's a demo of this as well if you look at the presentation. And it basically shows navigating data on a map where you can easily browse up and down not the parthood hierarchy, but rather the type hierarchy of the data, while leaving all of the data in its original place in a normal GIS system. Finally, the space package trait integration between space and semantics. This was a new implementation of combining reasoning and spatial indexing. And it supports indexing of points and polygons, range queries, nearest neighbor queries, etc. And it joins several other implementations that are already out there for doing similar things. Allegro Graph, Parliament, which we did, Oracle now supports combining these things, and Geospatial Web. And I put this up mainly because the critical mass for these sort of implementations is now getting to the point where you could really go out and do this stuff without having to build up from the ground. We had a lightning talk session where anyone who wanted to could come up and give a quick 5-minute talk. Two that were given there that are probably relevant here. Javier Lopez from Oracle, is going to be trying to push a representation for spatial data in Sparkle through the OGC. So we're going to try and get involved in that, and anyone else who wants to be involved in that should do so as well. I believe that the first meeting related to that is coming up in December, but I don't remember the date off the top of my head. John Goodwin from Ordnance Survey. Ordnance Survey has now put a lot of their administrative region data online in a linked data semantic web format. So while not necessarily useful unless you are doing something with data in the UK, I think it's a really good model for how our services could potentially post their data. And if you follow that link later, you'll see the nice webpage version of that. So what I really took away from this workshop this year particularly is that the geospatial semantic web is no longer something that we have to talk about in the future tense. And there are three really key parts to making that statement. We have some really interesting use cases for why you need to combine those two forms of reasoning. And we have built out applications that show what you can do when you combine them. There's enough real open data to drive these applications. You don't necessarily need to be making up the data on the spot to prove the point. And there are enough implementations for storage and retrieval to form the backbone of these systems that you can go out and do. Terracognita 2010, ISWC 2010 is in Shanghai, China, next year. It's undecided at this point whether either Nancy or I will get to go to China next year. So if we don't go there, then we need to consider other possible venues for keeping the workshop series going. And that is all that I have. Are there any questions? Oh, Nancy, would you like to add anything?
I think you covered everything very well. Thank you.
Hey, this is Lynn Erstry. Let me say something here. You had my presentation, Nancy. You wanted to post it. I have shared that with USGS. You can now make that available to people on your website.
Okay,
no
great.
Problem.
Okay, thank you.
That's great. Sure. Hopefully I didn't paraphrase you too badly then.
No, you did an excellent job. Thank you.
Hi, this is Victor. Could you explain a little more what the Oracle Javier guy was going to do in terms of OGC, Oracle, and Sparkle?
Sure. So a few years ago, the first application came out that used Sparkle for querying a combination of RDF and geospatial data. The implementations that I was familiar with before going to the workshop were our own and Allegro Graphs. And basically, there's some ambiguity as to how to best fit querying geospatial data into Sparkle. And what they're trying to do is make how you query spatial data in Sparkle into an OGC standard. Is that any more clear or no?
Are they representing the OGC models in RDF and then based on those models do the query?
That's the general idea, though there's ambiguity in how best to store the OGC data itself in RDF. So there's really two tied together issues there. You know, how do you represent spatial data itself in RDF in a good way? Is that in terms of, is there an XML literal in the RDF that just contains GML, or should the content of the GML bit be translated into RDF, et cetera? And then once you have that, then how do you query that? What does the query look like? The binary relations, are they triples? Are they filters? Et cetera.
I'm intrigued by the who's predicting. You said bridge parcel, the zoning restriction or something.
Yep.
So is this done with a precise algebra where the rules are just chained, or is it done statistically where different contexts would lead to different? I mean, I would think that would be a place where the knowledge, well, what I think of it as a RDF sparkle kind of contribution would fall far short of what would be standard statistical practice to do such a predictive model.
It's not a predictive model. They use OWL, so there's a bit more expressivity than just doing RDFS. And it's, I guess maybe an example would help. So if you have a restriction that says you can't have a particular type of zoning right next to a park, then you can encode that in OWL, and it goes together with the spatial data in such a way that you can then look at an entire plan and say, okay, I've done this whole plan. Does this violate any of the many overriding or conflicting rules of that type in the overall system?
Other questions? Anybody on the phone have a question?
Thank you very much.
Okay, we are done with our morning presentations. Yeah, a little bit of afternoon presentations also. Now, what our agenda was structured to do in the game plan was, after we were done with the formal presentations, and the microphone keeps going to roll off, after we were done with these presentations, was to break out into some discussion topic sessions. We had planned that we would have about an hour and a half, somewhere from 2 to 3:30, and we would do two 45-minute sessions because we had four topics that were identified. We're at almost 2:30 local time now, and I think we ought to get back together at 3:30 for a wrap-up so that we can be done by 4 and, you know, respect everybody's schedule for getting out here, also given the probable traffic situation this afternoon. So I guess I'd like to throw it out for the group. What are your preferences for this afternoon? We have four topics. One is a further discussion of the reference model and ontology value proposition, and how should we proceed with trying to develop a semantic and ontology reference model, and if so, where do we go? Follow up to the Neo Geo session VoCamp activity, and you heard some about that, and Todd Taylor is here to lead that discussion. A discussion on coordination on integrated demos, such as what Luis showed and other demos that might be out there. And then last topic was a discussion on the USGS ontology for the national map and populating geospatial ontology repository or building a registry or something along those lines. I don't think doing half an hour in each, you know, subject is probably going to be enough, but I guess what I'd like to do is just open up and see what the group thinks is the best thing to do, and then we'll go from there.